Welcome to CMO Combo, the podcast where we deep dive into the minds of chief marketing officers from across the globe. Every week, we bring you candid conversations with top CMOs who share their experiences, strategies, and insights into the ever-evolving world of marketing leadership. Join us as we learn from the cream of the crop, uncovering the secrets to their success and the lessons learned along the way. Whether you're an aspiring CMO, a seasoned marketing leader, or just passionate about the art and science of marketing, CMO Convo is your go-to source for inspiration and actionable insights. Hi, Katie. Thanks so much for joining us on CMO Convo today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to chat with you.
Yeah, I'm really excited too. And I really think our audience is going to benefit from this topic as well. Before we get started, I'm sure our audience would just love to hear a little bit more about you, your background and your kind of journey to your current position.
Sure. Well, you know, my business name is Wild Path Consulting because I've definitely taken my own path, found my own way to get where I am. So I am Katie Smith and I'm a fractional chief marketing officer. So essentially what that means is businesses who don't need or can't quite afford or aren't at the level to have a full-time chief marketing officer, marketing leadership in their business, but they could still benefit from that strategy. They can hire me to come in just as needed for specific projects to get them from one place to another. And so I just kind of come in for a short period of time, anywhere from a few months to a couple of years, and provide that leadership for them at the level that they need, at the cost that works for them. So you don't have to have, you know, it's such a big jump to have a full-time chief marketing officer, but every company can benefit from that strategy. So I come in and help them with that.
Yeah, for sure. It sounds great. So I'm interested in what would draw a person to that kind of position then in particular, rather than just being a full-time kind of CMO. What is it about the fractional CMO life that kind of appeals to you?
So I don't enjoy working with just one company, solving one set of problems. I really enjoy the complexity of having new problems to solve, different companies that need different things. I'm a problem solver. That's what I love to do. And when the problem is solved, I get bored. I don't like to just keep moving forward. So for my particular personality, it works really well. Every day looks a little different. You know, essentially the problems that we're solving are similar across, across businesses, across fields, across industry. They're sort of similar problems, but it's always nice to have to look at it with a fresh way to get new perspective. And then I find that I can bring in a different perspective to a different industry from having worked with a variety of people. So that's really what works well for me. I like the variety. I like the constant challenge. And I really love that.
So what is, you mentioned that, you know, a lot of the problems that they're dealing with are kind of similar. Can you highlight some of those for me? Like, well, what do you think are the common problems that people are looking for at the moment, which would make them sort of seek out a fractional CMO?
Definitely. So, I think it's important to say that we're not all the same. Fractional CMOs, we're not all the same. We don't work in the same industry. So it's important to look at what you need for your business and seek someone who's going to fill that spot. So for me, I really like to work with companies who are, they're coming into a growth stage. So they're not startups anymore, or, you know, they've got their business plan figured out. They have a little bit of a marketing place. They've been doing really well with what they're doing, but it's not working anymore. And they don't know what to do next. So they're just trying things with no real strategy to it, hoping something will work, feeling nervous that it might not work, and just are really lost. So I My background is actually as an outdoor guide. So I wasn't in business marketing at all for a long time, for my 20s. I was leading people into the wilderness. So on horseback, hiking, cross-country skiing. And I like to take that approach into what I'm doing. So I always had to be looking ahead. I always had to be surveying what was happening. We had our goal in mind. I was leading us to that goal. But whatever obstacle or animal or whatever it was that came into our way, whether it was weather, you know, a bear, a moose, down trees, I had to find our way around it while keeping everybody safe, having fun, and happy. So I take that into my role as a fractional CMO. So I've got one, you know, I always say when I was on horseback, I never was sitting forward in the saddle. I was always sideways so that I had one eye looking ahead at the trail, assessing the situation, and one eye back looking, making sure everybody was okay. And so that's really how I approach things. So I love taking people who are feeling like marketing is a bit of a wilderness for them and leading them along in the journey, giving them the skills, the setup, the program that they need to be successful while guiding them through, helping them overcome obstacles. We always make a plan. We always have to change the plan. That's just life. So that's really what I love to do in the marketing world. Marketing also is always changing, especially right now. There's so much change happening. There's so much uncertainty happening. You have to be flexible in your plan. And I'm having the most fun I've had, I think, at this stage in my career, in this stage where marketing is, because we get to be nimble, we get to experiment, but we also have to do it with strategy. And I just love the mix of those.
Can you, I'm really interested in this, like this idea that, you know, sometimes companies don't know especially what they're doing, you know, or what they're going to do next. And you kind of you're there to kind of advise them on what the next thing might be. Have you ever had any difficult conversations around this? Has there ever been a point where somebody sort of like has really like clung to a particular idea, route that they want to take, and you have to kind of advise them maybe that's not the best route to take? I'd be interested to hear like how you would approach that.
Yes, that happens with, it's so common. It happens with almost every company. Yeah. And there's different reasons for it, right? So sometimes it's coming from the top, from people who are in the C-suite, who have an idea that they have in their head, but they don't really understand how it works. And they're kind of trying to push that down on the company. And it's not aligned. It's just like people hold on to trends. And maybe that actually is not going to work for your company, for the people that you're targeting, for the product that you're selling. So that's why I think it's important. One of the key things about why I want to be in that chief marketing officer role is because having that voice in the C-suite is where I can affect change. So I'm always working with my team, my marketing team, but I'm their voice. I'm advocating for them. I'm advocating for the company with people who don't really have that marketing expertise. So they have an idea, or this is what, you know, my friend in my business group said is the great thing to do, and I want to do it. And the way that we explain it is through facts, right? So there's bringing up studies, bringing up things. It's not just me saying, I think this is a good idea. Everything, every strategy that I suggest is backed up by data, by other research, by trends. And we can always suggest it. You know, one of my clients, they have a contract with the state government. We're working to increase the number of foster parents. And so it's not just, you know, the level of the organization that we're working with. There's also this added layer of government. And their role is to be really good and understand foster care and understand how, you know, what the government programs are and how they're working. And so they have really very little understanding of marketing. And in the structure, you know, I don't often, we've changed it so that when we are proposing something new, we can get in the room with those people. But often there's other layers of decision makers. And so not only do I have to communicate why a certain strategy is going to be the right strategy for this particular project or problem that we want to solve, but we also have to teach them how to communicate that along the line, you know, of people with different experiences. So that can be really tricky. And I always want to make sure that what I'm saying is backed up and that it's communicated in a way that people can, they can refer back to it. So often when we do, we figure it out when we want to do a proposal for our next project or our next theme, our next advertising, we always will supplement our proposal with research, data, articles from reputable sources that show why we think that this is the next thing. And then, of course, we collect a lot of information and data about when we execute, so we can then say, this is what we've seen as successful. Or, you know, marketing is always experimentation, so there's always something that's not going to work out, and we'll say, we like to be upfront about that. So we'll say, this didn't work out. This is what we are going to try and change, or this is, or we want to shift our advertising dollars to this other piece that's doing well. So transparency is important. Communication is important, and making sure that people have the information that they need to feel safe in trusting you and moving forward.
Yeah, I see. Yeah. So it's not just about like you, it's kind of about arming them with the knowledge as well.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I that's a really interesting everybody point. To...
Yeah. It's an interesting point, I think, that allowing people not just educating them, but also empowering them to educate people within the company, within their organization as well, how to communicate it, I think is really, really great. You know, it's kind of like, yeah, you need them to become kind of champions for your ideas as well, don't you, in a way, and to be able to convince other people. I think that's really, really great. So let's talk a little bit about like the kind of day-to-day job then, because obviously, like you said, this is kind of, you know, it's going to look different than if you're working at a company or whatever it is. But I imagine the way it works for you is that you have kind of like, you know, a contract that lasts for so long, don't you? And you're working with a particular company. But on average, so it might look very, very different, but I'm just curious, like what does your day-to-day look like as a fractional CMO? Or is it just wildly different depending on the company that you're working in? Like...
there's a lot of variation. I think there's... It depends on what's going on. So I have a few different ways that I work with people. So sometimes a company, they just need a strategy. They have implementation, or they're just not, they don't need a fractional CMO. We're not doing a huge growth project. And so I do these strategy sessions that last about 6 to 8 weeks. And so if I have one of those, I have pretty set things that need to happen every day on that project, whether I am, I have spreadsheets of information that they need to give me. So I have to make sure that's communicated for them. And then, you know, for 1 week, I won't have a lot of things to do on that project because they're working on it. They're getting me the information. And then I have to sit down, sort through the information when I get it, start doing research, because I always do. Listening and researching in industry are key. You have to listen to people. You have to listen to what they're saying to you. And then you need to go out and see what's happening in the industry so that you can understand where to position the client. So that's a lot of what I'm doing at the first part of that. And then once I have that and we're working together on the strategy, it's sort of, you know, there's a set night. So it's really nice when I have those because I know what I'm doing every day and there's like a structure to that. But with my, then I have clients where I am acting as their chief marketing officer for a period of time. For a company who we've got something to start, we are diving in, I'm with them, you know, every week. Then we usually have a 1 weekly meeting where we're kind of talking about what we need to do next, what's happening, and then we kind of create, you know, the various tasks that we're all going to be doing as our team. For me, it's a lot of research and it's a lot of problem solving. So we have that meeting, and then we set up other meetings, you know, within the group. Like for this foster parent group, we've got meetings with our design team when we're working on projects, or with our video team. So a lot of it is attending meetings in that sense and kind of steering things. I say that my job involves a lot of herding cats. So I take all of these people with all these different ideas and have to make sure that we're all on the same path, moving the same direction. So that's a lot of it. But then there's also the growth time for me. So I need to know, I'm not going to be an expert in all pieces of marketing. I rely on my team members, the people that I work with, the contractors that we bring in to be subject matter experts. But I need to know enough about different tactics about marketing, what's happening, what trends are happening, so that I can kind of keep us. I like my clients to be just a little ahead of the needle, not far ahead, but just a little ahead, so that I feel like that's where we have the greatest flexibility and we can adjust to market changes the best. So I need to be up on what's new, what's happening. I need to know enough so that I can speak the language of all of my subject matter experts, help them see the goal of the company, make sure we're all moving forward. So I do a lot of education on my own, just to stay relevant, to stay understanding what's happening, so that I can basically really be a translator between the client and then whoever our specialist is.
Yeah, definitely. It sounds really, really interesting. Like, I think it's, I like the idea of just kind of just every day seems like it's a different adventure almost, you know.
It is.
It's kind of like, do you work with predominantly similar kind of, is there a kind of industry that you like to stick within, or is it really, really broad reaching for you, what you've done?
It is broad reaching for me because I have a variety. I have such a varied background. So I've worked with nonprofits a lot and I understand that world very well. And I treat my nonprofits, our marketing, I treat them like a for-profit. So they tend to be a little bit ahead of the curve when I work with them. But I also really love manufacturing. So I've worked with I have a background in metal manufacturing, and I still currently work with a metal manufacturer. I love manufacturing. I love B2B and I love how things are made. So I just finished up a project with a company that makes CNC machines, which is really, really fun. They make small CNC machines. And manufacturing has my heart, but I've worked in so many different realms. Just in my, before I started off on my own, I've worked in fintech. I've worked in, international projects. So I can kind of move around, and often, so I really work with people who are trying to change their industry. They want things to be different. They want things to work better. And so they bring me in often because I'm not entrenched in an industry. So I can bring fresh ideas. I can bring new perspectives in, and I can help them kind of become thought leaders or change makers in their industries. So that's really I fit in.
And that's really great in a way. I totally get the appeal then of bringing someone else in. I think, if you're looking for a different way of doing things, I think if people have been in a company too long, sometimes like they kind of, you get kind of stuck in your routines, don't you? And your way of doing things. Yeah. And sometimes you do need a fresh pair of eyes, I think, on it to sort of see. And sometimes you need people to see it from the outside as well. I think sometimes when you're in a company for too long, it can be difficult to kind of take a step back and look at it and say like, okay, but what are we doing here that maybe isn't, maybe this making us kind of fall behind the curve, or isn't quite up to, maybe it's a little bit outdated at this point. Like, how can we kind of freshen things up? I think it's a really, really great skill to have. And speaking of skills, I want to get onto that next. So kind of, I imagine, a lot of the skills you know, are similar with what other marketers, but are there any particular skills that you think you need to have to kind of excel in this position that maybe not everyone in the kind of marketing sphere could do? What would you say, like, the kind of skills that you should either look to have or to hone?
Yeah, I think so. The skills that people overlook the most are your ability to listen and to ask good questions. So that, to me, is top, because I'm coming into a company that I don't know, I'm not a part of, but I need to assimilate to that company. I need to become part of that company, which is different, right? When you hire an agency, that agency is outside of your company. But when you hire a CMO, and I as a fractional, yes, I'm a contractor, but my job is to be, is to become part of your company and to be, to advocate for that company. So I need to get up to speed quickly, but I also need to, and I need to understand all the ins and outs of the company. I also need to understand the industry, so I'm not the subject matter expert of whatever we're selling. Other people are. So I try to have a lot of listening sessions. And aside from me, like, gaining knowledge, the other thing that that does is build trust with me and the people that I'm trying to work with. And that is such an overlooked skill. And but that's really the secret to my success, is the amount of listening that I do.
Yeah. I think that it's probably really, really overlooked, isn't it? I think people focus too much on being able to communicate, which is obviously really, really important. But I think people really, I imagine when people bring you in, what they want to see is that you understand what they're about, you know, what their, yeah, what their kind of brand identity is. And that you, I mean, I guess this is another kind of question I was thinking of as well, is that, like, would you consider taking on a client if you felt like their kind of, their brand or who they were as a company didn't kind of resonate with you? Or do you think it's really important for you that you listen to who they are and it kind of strikes a chord with you and you get it?
Yes. I need to feel, to do my best work, I think maybe for anybody, you need to feel like it's a right fit culturally. Yeah. And for me to work in the way that I do, you know, I think I'm not the fit for every company. Every company is not the right fit for me. And so I try to do a lot of that listening in the pre-sale, you know, in the sales call. It's much, as much, and them too, you know, it's as much an interview of, for them to understand me, for me to understand them, to see if it's going to be a good fit. Because if we don't have that synergy, we're not going to be able to do the work that we want to do. You know, I think a fractional CMO needs to be able to work with everybody in the company. So marketing is not just its own little silo. It's not going to work well, especially nowadays. Marketing actually needs to be part of the entire company. So you need to have a relationship with the CFO. You need to understand what products or services are bringing in the most money, which ones are not doing so well. And you need to have that perspective from your CFO. You need to have that relationship. You need to have a relationship with all of your customer success team, because they're on the front lines. They're talking to everybody. They're getting the feedback from the customers. They're a huge insight. You know, marketing and sales need to work as a team. I think especially in a B2B company that's sales forward, marketing needs to support sales. It's not a competition. They need to work together, because really it's not about my ego or how well I do or how well sales does. It's about our customer, and it's about making sure that their experience is a wonderful experience from start to finish. What they're promised in marketing ends up being true in sales. What they're promised in sales ends up being true on their onboarding. What happens in their onboarding needs to be experienced throughout their entire relationship with you. And all that happens through communication, and it starts with marketing. And I think as a CMO, your job is to make sure that you're opening those lines of communication, you're weaving that web, you're taking that insight and adjusting your plans and your strategy based on what you're hearing. And that's a tough job, and that skill set is important. So if you don't feel like a company is going to allow you that access, for me, that's a no. I'm not going to be able to do my job.
Yeah, definitely, 100%. Like, I think it's, I think we, this is one of the most common complaints we hear, actually, is people saying that, you know, there's this kind of, I don't know what it is, like this mythical kind of rivalry between sales and marketing. I don't quite get that. Like, I guess there's a marketing and sales blame game that happens in some companies, you know, sometimes. And I feel like I've heard a lot of marketers say, look, like, these two functions need to understand each other in order for everything to work, you know. That's how it needs to work, definitely. Yeah, yeah. That's great. Yeah. So what are the, then we've sort of been through like what the benefits are and everything, but what do you think are some of the biggest challenges that you've faced in particular, and how have you overcome them?
So I think that's a perfect follow-up to what we've been talking about. As the issue with marketing is that so much of it is a little bit intangible and hard to measure, right? So when things are going well, sales gets all the credit, right?
Yeah.
When things are going wrong, marketing gets all the blame. And there's ways, you know, we try to set up measuring as much as possible, but the truth is that we're dealing with humans, and humans are unpredictable. And with marketing, it's a lot, and especially if you have a long sales process for your product, you don't know what's going to be the thing. The people are just kind of bouncing around your customer journey, hitting things like, you know, it's like pinball. And then something will be the thing that makes them decide, I'm ready. And then they'll purchase. And so sometimes you can track on a digital world, you know, you can track as much as possible, but there's always going to be a portion that you can't track, especially when it comes to branding. Branding is so hard to track. So I think that is, you know, getting those right metrics and proving that you're, what you're, you know, the attribution is always going to be a challenge for marketing, no matter where you're at, unless you're doing unless you're selling a product completely digitally where you can just track somebody's entire trail of you. That's the only way that you can really understand attribution, but that doesn't work for most companies. How do you track word of mouth? You know, how do you track? There's things that we can do to get an idea. And so if you're not working with people who understand that and understand that marketing is an investment, not necessarily just a bottom line expense, that can be a real challenge. But I think attribution is always going to be our number one trouble point because we work with humans. Because our customers are humans and they are unpredictable at points.
Yeah. Yeah, completely. And sometimes what they say they want is not what they really want as well, isn't it? You know, that's the thing I think is like, you can do all the kind of focus group interviews that you want sometimes, but it can actually be hard to really gauge what a person really feels. And sometimes the way people interact with the product is not actually how they say they do. And that's why, you know, those kind of insights that, like, you know, for example, if you have a SaaS product, a digital product or something like that, where you can really like track exactly how they're interacting with your product and where they're engaged or where they're dropping off, that's really, really helpful. But like you said, you can't actually tell. With certain industries, there's no way of doing that, you know? So how do you get that feedback from people, and how do you get, you know, the sort of, how do you gauge how people really feel about the product and how they're using it? I imagine is so challenging. And I'm eager to learn how you would go about that, actually. How do you go about, in terms of your research, finding out like what people think about a particular org, a particular brand, and how they use it?
So you have to do a multi-prong way. You have to do that. So that's, for me, often it's a combination of surveys, and there are so many ways that you can do that. So you can send out a survey, you know, quarterly, annually. You can add one question into your email. There always has to be an incentive, but there's always ways that you can be asking questions, and you can weave that into some of your customer success. That's why you have to have a relationship with customer success, so you can weave some of those questions in. Focus groups are also a great way to, you know, one-on-one chatting. You can also interview some of your best customers. So making it just part of your plan constantly, always, and then you have to look at it. You have to look at, so here's the other thing is that surveys, all those questioning, those interviews are ways that you can build trust with people, but you have to follow through. So if you earnestly ask people what they think, what they'd like to change, and they tell you and you don't do it, they're not going to trust you again. So you have to be thinking, part of what makes me particularly good at being a CMO, and especially a fractional one where I'm not just fully invested in a company, is that I'm always thinking like six steps ahead. I'm so future focused as a person that I see, I'm always like, well, what happens next? That's basically how I build marketing strategies. I always ask, well, then what happens? So if you're going to do something and you're going to collect this information, you need to already have a plan to execute on it. And incorporate it, and then let people know that you're incorporating so that you can build that trust capital. But always listening, and then, you know, pay attention to the reports, pay attention to what companies are saying, what people are saying. So a few years ago, I was really interested in how people, like, what's the green economy, and how are people, but, you know, you see in all these surveys, people are, you know, 98% of people are saying that they, that environmentally friendly products are the most important to them, right? But then, so I went on a listening tour and I talked to a bunch of people in the industry. And what I learned was that that was actually not what people were doing. That's not what people made them buy. So
this,
you know,
is exactly
that's
what
something
I was saying, isn't it? Like,
yeah. They don't. This is the. So it's not, your product has to do the job that they want it to do. It has to be easy and accessible. Those are still things. And so your green commitment is a differentiator. So if they're deciding between you and somebody else and it's an equal product, then your commitment to the environment or to people or something, that is still important. And it's still important to say that because it'll bring people to you. But if your product doesn't work and it has poor reviews, people are not going to choose it. They're not going to stick with it. And so you still have to have a very good product. And I think that's what, in that industry, I think that's what people are misunderstanding. They get frustrated and then they're like, well, nobody really cares. It's like, well, they care, but they also need something that's going to work for them, and that's going to be their choice first.
Yeah, there's a kind of hierarchy of needs, I guess, when it comes to
that's exactly what I say. I have a degree in psychology, and I often talk about the hierarchy of needs, right? And so that, like, that green aspect, that is like the self-actualization piece. So people who want to see themselves as that person, you know, in your product or service can help them be, you know, live that way, look that way, achieve that piece, then they're going to choose that. But you have to meet their other needs first.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Like because I work, a lot of the writing I do is primarily in software and SaaS. And obviously that does cover marketing as well. But one of the things, you know, one of the reasons why a lot of digital companies fail still, most startups fail, is just because they're not doing that basic thing of providing products that just solve problems, you know, like real problems that people have, you know. And even they might have the kind of snazziest product in the world, but it's just that simple thing, which would be kind of at the bottom of the hierarchy, you know, that it's like the most basic thing that people need. That's going to make people stick to it, they don't have, you know. And I imagine a lot of your job is kind of, how do you communicate that, You know, first and foremost, like, how do you communicate that we have something that's actually really going to solve problems that you have? You know, it's amazing how many people get it wrong still. I watch, you know, like ads on YouTube, on TV and stuff, and I'm kind of like, I don't know what this product does. You know, like, I've sat here and watched this ad and I couldn't, not, I could tell you maybe what it is, but I couldn't tell you what it does, you know, from watching this,
yep.
You know, and I think that's, it's crazy. It's such a basic thing that people still miss, isn't it? You know?
Well, and yeah, I think the trick to another reason why bringing in a fractional CMO is, because you get stuck in your company, you forget what basic knowledge is in your company, right? So I do a lot of customer journey mapping, and that's really how I work. And what I've learned too is that, so I do, it's a custom customer journey map. And what I'll do is learn the industry language. And then it's not just like discovery phase and marketing words. It's the phase that is correct for the industry, correct for the company, in their language, in their terms, right? Because I'm in marketing. If I'm assuming everybody in the company knows the basic terms of marketing, then I'm already missing the boat. People are not going to trust me. They're not going to like me. They might think, oh, she speaks eloquently, but I don't know what she's saying. And it's the same thing that we have to do. And it can be not that exciting for creatives who are working in the company to say the same thing all the time. They feel like they've said it enough. And I always say to people, unless people are calling you and saying, stop saying, I already understand this about your company, stop saying it, then you're not saying those basic things enough. You know, an ad can be beautiful and fun and entertaining to watch, but what makes people click on it is if they understand that it can solve their problem. People at that basic level, at that first discovery level, are very self-interested.
Yes, yeah, completely. Yeah,
and I so can believe that. It's boring, but you have to go back to that.
Yeah, you have to go back. I had a conversation with somebody the other day, actually, on a podcast where we were saying, like, often it's actually a case of just stripping it down to its simplest form, like, free of all jargon. And that's really a lot harder to do than you think it is sometimes, you know?
It's so hard.
Yeah. It's funny that, isn't it? So, yeah, what another thing I was wondering then is about kind of client expectations. Because I imagine this is like some of the pressure that a lot of, like, especially if you're a company that's never had like a kind of, you know, never had a CMO or a full-time CMO before. Do you ever get into a situation where you find like somebody you're working with has like ridiculous expectations or sky high expectations, and you kind of, they expect you to come in and kind of wave a magic wand, and you kind of have to say, well, no, like, you need to, where you have to kind of manage their expectations, actually. I'm interested in hearing stories about that, of having it that kind of experience.
So I have learned I made a lot of mistakes and learned the hard way a lot of ways.
We all have to.
And
yeah.
I've learned, if a company is in dire straits and they need something to work now, they're not my client. I don't work that way. And so I communicate that up front. And I say, listen, marketing can take 3 to 6 months to start really having an effect and to seeing the results. Yeah. And I also explain that marketing is a bit like science, right? We're making hypotheses. We're making educated guesses, and then we're testing those hypotheses. And we're making adjustments as they go. So the first 3 months of advertising, any new platform of advertising, is all experimentation. And we're seeing what the audience reacts to, and we're adjusting to that, and we're learning. So there's a big learning period. I always do look for the low-hanging fruit of what's not been done, what we think are some quick, easy wins. And it's really a mix of getting some of those wins in. And sometimes it's not, you know, sometimes it's efficiency within the system for me, and making people have more fun in their day job and feel like someone has their back and is advocating for them. Like, that can be a win, and that can lead to more productivity and, you know, a better outcome, a better product. But But there's always, I try to do a mix and set expectations of when we should start to see what's happening. The other thing that I've started doing is, the other thing I love about being a fractional CMO and not being an agency is that I have relationships with lots of different, like graphic designers and advertising specialists and all writers and all of these people that I can pull in to fill gaps in a team as needed. But then we still get reports from those people. I also have relationships with agencies who I love, so we'll pull them in. But then they give reports, and are, you know, a lot of times my clients are like, "What? I don't know what this means." So I'll say, you know, "Here's your marketing report in plain English," and I explain what's happening. This, you know, our Facebook ads were down this month. We think this is why, this is what we're going to do to change it. We'll keep monitoring it. And I just try to be really upfront and honest about how this works, what the expectation is. And then inevitably, this always happens. We'll lay out a strategy, we'll execute it, and then they'll come back to me and say, "Can you believe that our website traffic is so high? I wonder what happened." And I have to say, "Well, do you remember all the work we've been doing?" That's what happened. So it's always that communication. It's a little bit of reminding of and letting them know. I think the other thing is setting your KPIs up front for what the goal is, right? So you're not just going to say like, "We're going to have increased website traffic." We need to know why. So I always start with, what's the company goal? Where do you want to go? And then we figure out our tactics. I say tactics are interchangeable. It doesn't really matter. It's really like, it's dependent on what's the company goal and who are our customers? Where are they hanging out? What are their needs? And then that's how you build it up. You don't come in and say, "Well, we're going to do TikTok and we're going to do Facebook and we're going to do this." It's building from, you know, it's, you don't know where you're going to end up there. It's like starting a hike without a map, without a plan. And like, "Well, we'll just take some of these trails and hopefully we'll end up where we want to go." No, that's not how we do it. So we have to look at those things and say, "Well, what do we think is the, are the best tactics that we have resources for that our customers are interacting with?" So we plan those out, and then we plan KPIs that match those specific goals so that we can monitor. You know, we have our big goal of increased sales or whatever that is, but within that, that's made up of a whole bunch of incremental goals. And that's what you're monitoring. And you're not, you know, it's, and those are just kind of like goalposts that you're gauging and helping you decide, do I need to make a turn? Do I need to change plan or change direction? So that you're not just going along and then halfway through the year, you're like, "Our sales are down." You know, you should know what's happening every month so that you can be nimble.
Yeah. Completely. Yeah. I feel like that's the thing, isn't it? Like, you can't plan everything, but I think you can only be, you can only pivot and you can only be nimble if you do have a game plan initially, because you'll have planned for all of these potential things that can, that could not turn out the way you imagined they would. You know, I feel like, you know, no one wants to be in a position where they're running around just putting out fires all the time. But that kind of but that happens without planning, doesn't it? I think often, you know, end up in that situation. Yeah, for sure. Well, Katie, I could talk to you about this all day, honestly, but I do. Unfortunately, we do have to wind it up soon. But I was just wondering if you could, one thing I'd be really interested if you could tell me is that, what is the thing that you think in marketing that people think is true, like a commonly held belief that really isn't true or is different than what people think?
Oh my gosh. I think there are so many. So people think that you just have to put your information out there and then the people will come. You know, if you build it, they will come. And that's just not true. You actually have to tell people what to do every step of the way. You have to tell them to click on something. You have to tell them to read something. You have to tell them to fill out a form. You have to tell them what to do every single step. They're not just gonna do it on their own. You have to tell them what to do. And honestly, what that is taking away a decision fatigue for them. They don't have to decide, do I want to learn more about this company? Do I have to make all this effort? You just tell them what to do. It's actually a gift. They just know exactly what video to watch next, exactly what thing to read, exactly what form to click. Your CTAs are so important, and they really are a gift to people. So yeah, I think that's key. You can put out the most beautiful information, the most beautiful ads, but if you don't tell people what to do at the end of it, your conversions are not going to be as good.
Well, Katie, thank you so much. It's been a great conversation. If people want to reach out to you, find out more, like what, you know, this is your shameless plug time.
Yeah, so I love to hang out on LinkedIn. That's really where I like to have conversations. My name is Katie Smith, so there's a million of us. So you have to search Wild Path Consulting Katie Smith and you'll find me. But also my website is followthewildpath.com. So so you can also reach me there if you've got questions or want to learn more or read a case study. I've got all that information there. So those are the best ways to get in touch.
Thanks, Katie. This has been great.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of CMO Convo. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a rating and review on your preferred platform. Don't forget to tune in next week for another insightful conversation with a leading CMO.